Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. It is Monday, May 21. I am not believing that Memorial Day is next Monday. Is that actually true, Rebecca? You're nodding yes.
So says the calendar.
Boy, that's just hard to believe. But it's always a happy time of the year. It's kind of the beginning of summer, and it's a great day to celebrate. And also just to feel like a real American, Memorial Day. Love it. So we've got a great second hour coming up. Pastor Mike Damastis, I think I said that right, is going to be joining us. If you ever are in the Des Moines area at the intersection of Southeast 3rd and Army Post Road is his church, Fort Des Moines Church of Christ. And Miss Rebecca, who is behind the board today, attends there. And so full disclosure.
Yes.
Pastor Mike will be conducting a very important ceremony.
Yes,
in a
indeed.
Couple weeks.
Yes, as long as all goes according to plan.
Yes,
and I don't screw up too badly in this interview. But yes, Pastor Mike is good friend, good guy, and will actually be performing a wedding ceremony. My wedding ceremony. I don't know why it's weird for me to say that. I think it's because I don't want people to just think I'm all wedding all the time.
But you are right now.
A little bit.
Yeah.
For the next 2 weeks, that's my reality.
And Pastor Mike has been preaching in Philippians for a while, working out your salvation with fear and trembling.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Right now you're working out your wedding with fear and trembling.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. I can relate to that so well. But that is a key study, and it's been a really good place to start to kind of keep me focused. If you're reading the book of Philippians, it's a short read. And if you're in any place of struggle in your life or kind of facing some challenges, I recommend it because it's really been helping me.
Mm-hmm. And Mike has also served on the board of Personhood Iowa, which is the pro-life organization. And he actually hosts a radio show, too. So he should be really good.
Expectations are high.
They're very high. But we're going to talk a little bit about Iowa's new heartbeat law, which prohibits most abortions after 6 weeks. That's a hot topic, and that could get all the way to the Supreme Court.
It could. Yes. This could be one of those challenges to Roe v. Wade that people have been talking about needing
Indeed.
To happen for
yes.
my entire lifetime.
Yes.
So this could be it. We're not sure, but it is moving into the courts, and Mike has all the information on
that. Let's talk to him after the break. It's just 7 minutes. When we come back, Mike Damastis will be with us.
From the rising of the sun to the going down of the same. You are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name. I praise your name.
8 minutes after the hour, I am so glad you're listening this morning, and happy Monday. Thanks for spending it with me. The Fort is also known as the Fort Des Moines Church of Christ. Pastor Mike Damastis is in charge, and he is on our studio line with us this morning. Good morning, Mike. Welcome to the Snappy Patter.
Good morning to you.
Thanks. Rebecca and I have been chatting you up. I don't know if you got a chance to hear any of it, but we're excited to be talking to you. And you've got some duties coming up in a couple of weeks, some big duties.
Yeah, I do, actually, and it involves Rebecca.
It does. She's going to get married, and you're going to officiate. So we're glad and excited for that, and thank you for being such a supporter of Rebecca and such a great friend. So appreciate you.
Oh, that's fine. I love Rebecca very much.
No, oh, you guys, I'm right here in the room. Come on.
You are? Oh, we wouldn't have talked about that, like her like that if we knew she was here.
Uh-huh.
All right. All right, Micah, there's a lot of things I want to chat with you about, but let's start with the heartbeat law, Iowa's heartbeat law, which prohibits most abortions after 6 weeks.
That's true. And that's what's being said. And I want to say a couple of things about it. First off, keep in mind that a heartbeat is detectable around 18 days. And so the reason they say 6 weeks is that that's the time that most women would recognize that they're pregnant. So even though they put that 6 week marker on there, it's actually 18 days. So it's a really significant landmark in terms of when a heartbeat can actually be detected.
Mm-hmm. So, Mike, how did this legislation, how did it come about?
Well, the last session, not the one that we just ended, but our last legislative session ended with what many pro-life people here in the state of Iowa felt was kind of a deflated attempt, because we wanted to get life at conception. We didn't get that. It didn't have the votes mustered to be able to get that passed. But what we ended up with was a bill banning abortions after 20 weeks. And that was, we were like, wow, that's not what we were hoping for. But that actually was laying the foundation for what occurred this session. If that hadn't have been done, there would not have been a possibility of being able to pass this fetal heartbeat bill. Now, the fetal heartbeat bill went through a transition. It was very strong when it came through our Iowa Senate, but it got kind of watered down a little bit in the Iowa House because they couldn't get the votes mustered up in the Iowa House. So they added the exceptions of rape, incest, and fetal anomalies. They took away, as it left the Senate, there was actually criminal penalties in it, and they took those away. And so it kind of, I don't know, weakened the law a little bit, but it certainly is still something I think that is an advancement, and I'm thrilled that we do have this piece of legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mike, I know that churches and church leaders were really instrumental for a very long time, basically right up in the business of the legislators to see that this bill, that they actually got action on this bill, right?
Right. I think that we can say that there was a significant amount of leveraging of influence, maybe if I can put it that way, by not only the pro-life community, but Christians across the state of Iowa concerning this piece of legislation. It was really, really important, and everybody recognized it to be so. And they thought that we had some news stations that reported the fetal heartbeat bill had died, and it had not, because they had kind of moved it into the appropriations section of discussion, which is always at the end of the legislative session when they're talking about finances. They tacked it to a finance bill. And something else that's really important about this bill, by the way, that gets little discussion, is that they also have included in it the prohibition of fetal tissue selling or distributing in any way any fetal tissue in the state of Iowa, which is, I'm really glad it's in the law.
Now, in politics, don't you always just try to get whatever you can whenever you can? I mean, obviously, this is not the most satisfactory thing for a pro-life person, and following God's moral law, this is not what we would want. But in politics,
it's not the gold standard. The gold standard. And what is important to keep in mind, and one of my very dear friends said this, and he said that, keep in mind, we're still marching toward Berlin, but we just set some prisoners free from a concentration camp.
Mm.
And so we're still in the war. The war is not over, but we're marching toward Berlin. But it's important that we recognize what this has the potential to do.
Yeah, Mike, this is kind of part of the yellow brick road to Roe v. Wade, isn't it?
It sure is. And it's already been challenged now legally. The law is not set to go into effect until July 1st. And so it's facing its first legal hurdle. Planned Parenthood and ACLU, the ugly stepsisters, have decided to face a legal challenge against this. And they are doing it in state court, because the last thing they want to do is for this bill to get into federal court, which it most likely will, to be honest with you. But they want to keep it at state court level. But it's going to be at the Polk County, Iowa courthouse here in Des Moines on June 1st. The judge's name that's been assigned this case is Judge Michael Hubbert. So if your listeners can join us in Iowa, pray for Judge Michael Hubbert to have wisdom and oversight on this. That would be a wonderful thing. A lot of people were upset with our state's attorney general. His name's Tom Miller. He is a Democrat. He recused himself from this law. But it's funny because the people that are upset are actually the Democrats, because they wanted him to represent this piece of legislation and do a terrible job, you know, so that it wouldn't have a chance in court. But I'm very glad that he recused himself, because he let the Thomas More Society, who had said they would actually oversee the legalities of this case for free. They'll do it pro bono, and that's a wonderful thing. So it's not going to cost the Iowa taxpayer anything at all, as this thing is, litigated in court.
Yeah, it was a lot of hard work to try to pass this law, and it was a Republican-controlled legislature, wasn't it?
Yeah, we have the trifecta. We have the Iowa Senate, we have the Iowa House, and we also have the governorship. And that's something that's not done very often, but we do have it currently in the state of Iowa. Now, we have elections coming up in November, and a lot can change. And so we'll see, I guess, what happens, what we maintain. But at this stage, we were enabled with that to be able to get these kind of significant things done.
Mm-hmm. All right, Mike, let me take a break. When I come back, I might actually shift focus to working out your salvation with fear and trembling. I know you've been talking about that lately, because that's a big interest to me and probably our listeners as well. It's 16 minutes after the hour. Be back in just a minute with Pastor Mike Damastis. It is 18 minutes after the hour. My guest is Pastor Mike Damastis from Fort Des Moines Church of Christ, also known as The Fort. And he's been preaching lately on Philippians, and I know you're still working on it, Mike, but working out your salvation with fear and trembling. What does that mean?
Well, that's right out of Philippians chapter 2, verse 13 is what you're quoting, and that's just a snippet of the verse, but Paul says, keep in mind in verse 12, that word therefore, he just said all that wonderful stuff, the Christ hymn in Philippians 2, 5 through 11, that he was, he humbled himself, God highly exalted him, gave him the name that's above every name. And because he said all of those things, he says, therefore, as you've done this in my absence and even in my presence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it's God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. That's the verse. And what I have concluded about that, because that verse has been, I think, abused by a lot of people to maybe impose an idea of legalism, where we somehow would merit any favor from God because of what we do. And that's not what that verse is saying in any way, shape, and form. In fact, the verse is saying that we are advertising our salvation for God because of what he's done for us. I don't try to do good works for my salvation. I do good works because of my salvation, and that's it. And it's, he says it's with fear and trembling. It's a very serious thing, but it is our responsibility to actually pursue a holy life. And that's, we're told over in other places in Scripture, this is what we have been called to. We've been called to live a holy life, and that's that is what I believe is what Paul is saying in Philippians 2.
Mike, how often are we instructed about the pursuit of personal holiness?
No, over and over and over in Scripture. From the Old all the way to the New Testament, Leviticus 11:44, God himself says, be holy because I am holy. That very verse is re-quoted again by Peter in his letter, his first letter. I think that it's an essential part of who we are as Christians. Now, there's a part of holiness that you need to understand that you really have nothing to do with. God does it. He does everything. Mm-hmm. What can I do to add to what God has already done through Christ on the cross? But there's another part that is my responsibility in holiness. Paul wrote that letter to the church at Ephesus, and the very first three chapters, he spends just saying, you have been seated with Christ in the heavenly realm. And then you get to chapter 4, he says, now, walk like you're seated. And he spends the rest of the book explaining what it looks like to live in holiness and walk that out on a daily level. I would recommend, by the way, an incredible little book. It's old, but it's a wonderful book. The Pursuit of Holiness by Jerry Bridges is a wonderful book.
Yeah, I love that book.
Great.
I've met Jerry a number of times, and he's the real deal, too, in person.
I've never met him, but I love his material.
Yeah, he's great. So, Mike, let me ask you this. When Scripture says pursue holiness, but how often do pastors say that?
Not enough, honestly, and that's too sad for me, because I think a lot of churches understand that we say that, we nod our head to it, but we don't really actually practically live it out, and that's a sad thing.
I would agree. So, as you're studying the book of Philippians, what discovery did you make this time around studying it that came across as new and fresh, and I've never had this insight before?
You know, it's a little book Paul wrote to a church in the city of Philippi that he wrote from a prison cell in Rome. And we kind of look at his book as full of joy, but never once does he say that the little church actually has any joy. In fact, he's writing it because they were deficient in the arena of joy. And it's crazy to me when you think about that. It should be just the opposite. This church should be writing to encourage this man in prison to be more joyful. But he's the one that's giving them the encouragement to have joy. And that to me is just a wonderful thing. The Apostle Paul was an incredible person. I'm sure enabled by the Spirit of God, but he was an incredible man. To be trying to encourage this church, as he's the one, I think, that probably should have been trying to be encouraged.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that.
Yeah, I don't know if you've gotten to chapter 4 yet in your preaching series, but let's process.
No, I'm just starting chapter 3 this week.
Okay, let's just kind of look ahead, just because 4, 6, and 7 is obviously one of the most recognizable passages out of Philippians. Don't worry about anything, but in all your prayers, ask God for what you need, always asking with a thankful heart. How often do we go to God with not a thankful heart? We go maybe grumbling or angry or frustrated, or, you know, we're
right. And I'll tell you something. That's I just kind of got through that. You just asked me that verse about Philippians 2:13, and, you know, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Well, how do you do that? The very next thing he says is an incredible statement. Do everything without complaining or grumbling. It's like everything. That's something.
Yeah, I just got disqualified.
I know, that's hard. And the only possible way that you can live that way is by being obedient and yielding your life to the Spirit of Christ. That's how that's possible. And so he reiterates that again in Philippians 4, which is those are incredible statements. When you look at them at face value, it's they really are powerful things. But because that's calling us as Christians to a very high standard.
Oh, it sure is.
We can do that.
Yes, yes. And then it says, you know, God's peace, which is far beyond human understanding. You know, oftentimes we want worldly peace because we really want, you know, health restored or finances restored or children behaving properly. Or, you know, we're praying for all these things that would we think bring us earthly peace. But God says, no, I'll show up with my peace.
Right. And the wonderful thing about the peace of God is that it's something that is there in the midst of conflict. It's, you know, we look at peace as something where we want the conflict, the problem, the trial to be over. And God's peace is something that you have, that you can be in the midst of the hurricane of trial and you still have this wonderful sense of peace about you. That's what's so great. And that's why people don't understand it, but mm-hmm. it's an attractive thing. Because mm-hmm. people look at that and they say, where is this? How can you do this? Well, I want what you have. And that's what's so wonderful about
yeah.
it.
Pastor Mike, thank you so much for coming on the show. And thank you for marrying Rebecca and Matt in a couple of weeks. And I know you're looking forward to saying that line, you may now kiss the bride. And you can also add in, and if we were in France, you can now French kiss the bride.
Yeah, that, whatever.
Thanks, Mike.
You can't see it now, but I'm blushing. Thanks, Mike.
I know. She's
take care.
Four shades of red. All right. Thanks. Have a great day. 26 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be back in a minute. 31 minutes after the hour, we're going to take a little break for news, find out what's going on in the world, and then we're going to go across the pond, talk to Dr. David Aikman. He lives in Bray, Ireland. He's my foreign affairs correspondent, Time Magazine author, and also best-selling author. So we'll be back with Dr. Aikman in just a minute.
Together, growing in our faith.
Faith Radio has been a game changer in my life. For our whole family, I tell everybody I know about it. It's encouraging, it's uplifting. Every single day, it's changed the trajectory of our family's life. Honestly, it has been a source of comfort, a source of direction, a source of inspiration, a source of learning every day.
Faith Radio.
There's a battle raging in homes today. It's a battle for control. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Teens want control of their lives, but I've met many parents who are afraid to let them have it. Moms will tell me that their son is too immature to handle his own life, or dads want to teach the kid a lesson that the world doesn't revolve around him. This battle for control is natural, but Mom, Dad, you can't hang on forever. The more you clamp down on your teen, the more she's tempted to control her life in other ways, like violating rules behind your back. So be proactive. Find little ways to release your grip. You're not losing the battle. You're training your kids to be healthy and independent.
There's helpful new parenting resources from Mark Gregston coming soon to ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
Twenty-two minutes until the top of the hour. That's the theme song for Dr. David Aikman, my very special guest on our studio line. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Nice to have you with us this morning. There's lots
Thank
of things
you.
To talk about. Yeah, David, lots of things to talk about in the Foreign Affairs Department. I do want to start on a slightly lighter note, just with the your thoughts on the royal wedding this weekend.
Well, I thought it was spectacular. I mean, the combination of a beautiful sunny day, a wonderfully colorful location, the Windsor Castle environs, and a very beautiful woman marrying a royal prince. It couldn't have been better.
Yeah.
Perfect combination.
Yeah. The wedding cake cost $71,000. Sound like they got a deal, probably used a coupon.
Yeah, it probably got two birthdays thrown in as well.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I did not see any of it, but I think 30 million Americans watched it, and I don't know what the overall global viewership was, but I bet it was in the billions.
Yeah, the BBC kept saying it was between 1 and 2 billion, probably closer to 2 billion,
mm-hmm.
which I think is entirely possible. I mean, what is more attractive than seeing two people fall in love in a country which specializes in royal weddings and funerals and does a very good job at both?
Yeah, yeah. They are good at that. All right, let's talk about some of the violence in Gaza that happened over Israel's anniversary.
Right.
And the moving of the new embassy in Jerusalem.
Well, I think, of course, the move of the American embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv was a really annoying factor to both the Palestinians and much of the Muslim world. But I think the issue of the recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel was not the real strong point for the mobilization by Hamas of its supporters to not just to have demonstrations against the fence separating Gaza from Israel, but actually threatening to overrun the fence and potentially have violent people streaking into Israel proper and murdering Israeli agricultural families close to the border fence. So I think the Israelis were really aware of the danger of a possible breakthrough. And when some of the protesters, well, after all, 50 of the 60 were recognized just before the weekend by Hamas as being Hamas members. When some of these protesters were throwing Molotov cocktails at Israeli policemen and troops, I think you had a provocation that really demanded that the IDF exercise some form of self-defense.
Mm-hmm. What do you see happening going forward now?
Well, it's been complicated by the fact that people like Turkish President Erdogan have called for, at a recent conference this weekend, has called for an international security force to go supposedly and protect the Palestinians from Israeli violence.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a starter at all. I mean, I think the United States will almost certainly veto any UN Security Council resolution to create such a force and to mobilize it to the locations that Turkey wants it to be present. So I don't foresee any real developments, except I think we're going to see continued violence on the border, and Turkey is going to, you know, continue to be the ringleader of opposition to the use of self-protective force by Israeli forces when their border is being stampeded.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a very difficult argument for Israel to win, because nobody wants to see civilians in any part of the world shot dead by the defense forces of any country.
Mm-hmm.
And even though Israel can make a very good case that the people it shot dead were actually intent on overthrowing normal civilized boundaries between two different territories behind one of which countries was a perfectly sovereign nation, a member of the UN, that argument doesn't seem to count for very much to the people Erdogan is speaking to.
Mm-hmm. David, who's the real culprit in all of this violence?
I think undoubtedly Hamas.
Okay.
Because Hamas, first of all, is an institution that's ruled Gaza basically by violence ever since it took over in 2007. It is dedicated to not just the non-recognition of Israel, but the physical destruction of Israel, dedicated to the complete elimination of Jews on any part of the territory of former British Mandate Palestine. And it continually opposes efforts to temper the hostility between the two sides, and it's a ringleader of calling for violence against Israel.
Mm-hmm. David, what has been Prime Minister Netanyahu's response to this?
Well, his response at the weekend was to castigate the United Nations Human Rights Council for trying to pass resolutions condemning Israel and instituting some kind of investigation of the whole procedure. And he argued, I think quite correctly, and he was echoed by the United States in this respect, that the usual culprits of countries that perennially have voted against Israel were laying on the blame and completely ignoring situations in other parts of the world, which actually had produced more casualties in a comparable period of time. So it seems to be yet another example of the United Nations Human Rights Council completely overlooking much more egregious cases of violence that have been continuing for much longer, to specialize in focusing on Israel and laying the blame at Israel's door. So it's, I think his riposte to Erdogan's posture was quite forceful.
Mm-hmm. David, let me take a little break. When I come back, I want to ask you on the latest on North Korea. We've got apparently the summit
right.
coming up and the big meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un, and that's been possibly jeopardized, but we don't know for sure because we don't know what goes on behind the scenes. And then I also got another question for you on Venezuela and the re-election that's just going on there. So
right.
we'll discuss that when we come back with Dr. David Aikman. It's 14 minutes until the top of the hour. Minutes till the top of the hour. Dr. David Aikman is my guest. And David, it seems like we've got some strategy problems with President Trump and National Security Advisor John Bolton. He has advocated in the past bombing North Korea. So is that part of the discussion that might be sabotaging some of the talk between the president and Kim Jong-un?
Well, I don't think unless North Korea is pulling all kinds of quotes from the background of National Security Advisor John Bolton before he was in the White House position, unless
right.
they are doing that, I cannot think of any particular reason on the face of it why there should be any trouble with the forthcoming summit, except that if all of a sudden, Kim Jong-un is frightened about the prospects of his continuing to stay in power once he gives up all his nuclear weapons or gives control of them to somebody else. There does seem to be some fear on the North Korean side, and I'm just not sure what it is. We haven't really had an explanation from this. From the U.S. at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, John Bolton has written kind of extensively about the idea of the U.S. bombing North Korea, but he hasn't done it since he's been National Security Advisor, has he?
That's correct,
okay.
Yes. I mean, you have to dissociate pre-NS remarks from what he's said in the past several times on Fox News and in print in various sources.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you would comment on the presidential election in Venezuela.
Right. Well, I think this is a most unfortunate election because Maduro has steadily squeezed the buttons of control over his country, making it very difficult for people to oppose him in print, really punishing various companies that want to help improve the standard of living of mm-hmm. the Venezuelan people. And then, as the opposition has argued, basically bribing the Venezuelan people to vote for him by having these sort of tents or places outside polling stations, which offer people a chance to win a lottery if they simply go in and vote. And, of course, the prize is awarded by the Venezuelan regime. I think the whole system of political activity in Venezuela has completely broken down
mm-hmm.
because of Maduro's insistence on quelling any sort of vigorous opposition and in suppressing the normal functioning of a political democratic state. And I think we're really in a no-win situation at all at this point.
Yeah. I mean, David, how much is that nation in ruin right now, too? I mean, I heard soldiers are pretty much deserting because they're hungry. There's no food.
Yes, I think the average weight of a Venezuelan citizen has actually declined by, according to some estimates I've heard, as much as 20 pounds for an adult male as a result of this food crisis. And his refusal to allow the normal functioning of a free market economy to fill up the needs and wants of his citizens in a normal way. And so the ordinary functioning of market forces has been completely suspended for much of the country, and this is a catastrophe for the whole nation.
Yeah. Now, shift once again. Washington and Beijing have really decided to kind of abandon any trade war and stop imposing tariffs on each other. How is that going to work out?
Well, we just don't know. I mean, the Americans say that the Chinese government has made private offers to allow the United States to sell more stuff, particularly produce and other raw materials and things, inside China than was previously the case.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any specifics. We don't hear that Americans can sell X number or X percentage more hogs or more wheat or whatever. So it's not clear at all what is going on behind the scenes. But what does seem to be happening is the Chinese and the United States negotiators agree that a trade war would be very counterproductive to any peaceful resolution of trade issues that the two countries have between themselves. And I think most people will heave a sigh of relief when they realize that there isn't actually going to be a trade war.
Mm-hmm. David, do you think Beijing in the past has been able to take advantage of previous administrations?
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, I think Beijing was given the benefit of the doubt from the word go back in the 1980s when serious trade between the United States and China developed, and then again in the 2000 decade after China was admitted to the WTO. Basically, the United States refrained from punishing China for any of its human rights deficiencies in order to ensure that normal trade relations with China could continue under a WTO format. And so because the U.S. has totally neglected any kind of serious negotiating position in regard to China, they've taken advantage of every opportunity that they've had and have basically closed out American companies in many different areas.
Mm-hmm. David, you certainly help make these difficult situations and conversations, you help them make more sense, because these are hard to understand, some of the things that go on.
Believe me, that they're very hard for me to understand many times.
Yeah, so, but you think about them way harder than I do, and then you bring your expertise to the show, and you make it so wonderful. So thank you so much for being you.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for having me on the program.
You bet, David. Have a great day. I'll talk to you next week.
You too.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Dr.
Bye-bye.
David Aikman has been my guest, foreign affairs correspondent, living in Bray, Ireland. And we'll take a very short break and wrap up the show. Special thanks to Dr. David Aikman. How smart is that man? I just enjoy him so much. He has got such a great mind and a great thinker, and we're very lucky to have him on the show. Thank you so much for listening. Today is May 21. You know it's a Monday for sure. I hope you had a good weekend, and I appreciate you listening today. And we'll be here all week bringing you faith, hope, and clarity. So glad you're with supporting Faith Radio, and we love you. So have a great day. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.